Welcome back, podcast listeners. Questioning Medicine 2015. This is Andrew Bilt, and I am down here in sunny St. Petersburg, Florida. Oh, yes, it is so sunny. In fact, I just got in from being outside in 6 inches of powdery, white, fluffy sand. I hope that you had a wonderful Thanksgiving, spent time with your family, ate enough turkey to have tryptophan overload, and drank enough beer to sink the Mayflower. This episode is all about alcohol. Binge drinking alcohol, long periods of time, alcoholic cirrhosis, and then when do you give steroids? When does it really matter to give steroids? That is the question that I was chasing down.
Well, I've been known to cause a few breakups. I've been known to cause a few births. I can make you new friends or get you fired from work.
All right, I went to go visit family for the Thanksgiving holiday, and on my flight back was delayed for 6 or 7 hours. So what is a man to do for 6 or 7 hours when you're stuck in an airport that doesn't even have a coffee shop other than read a whole bunch of articles and chase down what I hope to be a quick podcast? If you can't tell already, I'm doing this one by myself again. However, Joe will be back in the coming episodes. We've got something planned for lung cancer screening, and we are finally going to tackle breast cancer screening, which many have asked for. So here we go. Again, I hope that you drank enough alcohol over the Thanksgiving holiday with friends and family to sink the Mayflower. However, if you have long binges of alcohol over long periods of time, you can get alcoholic hepatitis. And then when you come in, should we put you on steroids? Does it improve your mortality? Does it improve your morbidity? Well, first of all, we got to say, how do we tell if we give you steroids? We just don't give everyone steroids that happens to drink a little bit of alcohol. So you either have to do the MADRI score or do a MELD score. And which one is better? Which one is more predictive of a bad event? I'm going to be completely honest, I have no idea. And I know that is going to give me some emails, that is going to give some comments from individuals saying, oh, the MELD score is always the best. Oh no, the MADRI score is like... Here's what I can tell you. I don't necessarily know which one's better. I can give you articles suggesting that both are better or individually better. But today, I looked at the MADRI score. And overall, I don't think it really matters because... Once we get down to the final conclusion here, I think that you'll see no matter which score you use, it may not matter because using a score at all may not matter, but we'll get to that. So there was a Cochrane review on this in 2008, and when Cochrane touches anything, it's pretty much gold, or maybe it's the kiss of death. I'm not really sure because typically when Cochrane touches it, they say not enough evidence or inconclusive evidence or need more studies or... You get the idea. Cochrane is so picky, but that's what makes them so good. And when you look at their Kaplan-Meier curve, they pretty much said when using prednisolone for alcoholic hepatitis, there was an association with improved survival in the trials that enrolled subjects with a MADRI discriminant function score of greater than 31 or hepatic encephalopathy, but not in clinical trials that use other inclusion criteria nor when all trials were combined. So they're pretty much saying, if the patient's sick enough, then maybe prednisolone has a role in the treatment of alcoholic hepatitis. Okay, that's good. But in order to know where we're going, we got to know where we've been. So let's go back. What is the MADRI score? What does it come from? It comes from the Journal of Gastroenterology in 1978. And we've talked about old trials before. And how they're interesting because they don't quite follow the evidence-based medicine that we do today. This trial back in 1978 looked at corticosteroid therapy for alcoholic hepatitis, again, prednisolone. The idea being that you have this swollen liver, and if you can, due to inflammation, and if you can give steroids or prednisolone, you can decrease the swelling in the liver and essentially save the person's life. That might be a little drastic, but that's essentially what's going on. Now, this trial, again, 1978, not the best evidence-based trials we've ever seen, had a whopping 55 patients. And essentially what they did is you got either prednisolone, 40 milligrams, for 20 to 32 days, or you got placebo for 28 to 32 days. And apparently at that time, they had never heard of the intention to treat analysis because, for example, one person that was receiving prednisolone developed a GI bleed about 9 days into the study and was withdrawn from the final analysis. That is a big no-no in evidence-based medicine because, again, we need the intention to treat analysis at the end because maybe, just maybe, that prednisolone therapy was actually causing the GI bleed and we just didn't know it. It's errors like this or removal of data or analysis like this that makes it almost impossible to describe or discover the numbers needed to harm in a lot of these trials because as soon as somebody gets harmed, we just remove them from the final analysis. Not fair, not good, but it was there, and I thought that I would mention it. Now, this MADRI score, this is where it was developed in 1978 out of this paper in gastroenterology, and MADRI was the lead author. However, there were other authors like Bonnet, Bodine, Weber, Mezzi, White, so maybe it should be the MADRI, Bonnet, Bodine, Weber, Mezzi, White scale. Maybe. Although, that's a tongue twister and a mouthful, and I can see why they just left it to the MADRI scale. Now, it's important to note there was no difference, I repeat, no difference in mortality to those that received placebo compared to those that received prednisolone. And when you look at the final numbers, during the treatment segment, so the 28 to 32 days, there was 6 out of 10 patients that died in the placebo group, and 1 out of 5 that died in the steroid group. But 2 more patients in the steroid group actually died before they left the hospital. So if you're really looking at death leaving the hospital or why in the hospital, both groups were at 60%, either 6 out of 10 or 3 out of 5. It just so happens that 2 of them happened to make it a few extra days, so they were outside the window of the treatment therapy that we were giving. So when you don't have a difference, when you have no statistical benefit really, what do? You start data mining. You go back, you look through all the numbers, and you say, now where could we pick out little bits and pieces here and there to find out what really makes a difference here? Because no one really wants to publish a trial that says, this does nothing, and we can't find anything, so don't worry about reading this trial because it does nothing. Did I mention there's nothing going on here? So what did they do? Again, they went data mining and they did discriminant function analysis to see which lab tests were really bad omens. Which lab tests, if you had lab tests that were super off, or which surrogate markers, if you will, actually meant there was probably going to be a problem. What they found? A prolonged PT and the height of the bilirubin. Now, all the patients that died had a bilirubin of greater than 20 and a PT that was greater than 8 seconds over the control. Stop and think about that for a split second. The patients that died had a bilirubin of over 20. Those were some sick patients. And when you add up the lab functions as a variable on the death, those that died had a MADRI discriminant function score of greater than 93. I mean, holy smokes. These patients were super sick patients. I was looking over or reviewing a report from Janus General, Scott Weingart's made-up hospital for HIPAA compliance, and there was a patient with a discriminant function score of 48, and that patient was pretty sick. So, I mean, a discriminant function score of 93, double the amount of sickness, if you will, or at least lab values comparatively. If that is ever me, seriously, you can put the whole double barrel to my head and pull the trigger because, wow, that is just too much. Too sick. These patients were, and remember, we start treating at 31. And where did that come from? I'll be honest, I can't find the exact number. Likely from Cochrane and other meta-analysis, which have pretty much said 31 is, if you treat with steroids, that maybe when there's actually some benefit. When you look at individual patient analysis, if you will, over 31, there could potentially be some benefit. And so 31 in the score of, depending on what their bilirubin is and depending on how long their PT is, that's the number. But again, Cochrane said not much benefit. That was in 2008. And when you look at that Cochrane review, there was the trials they included had 30 patients, 55 patients, 42 patients, just no big trials, nothing that you could really bite your teeth into and say, ooh, this is it. This is the one to hang my hat on. This is the one I'm going to take home, bring to bedside or not bring to bedside and change my practice. Until 2015, New England Journal of Medicine, prednisolone or pentoxifilin for alcoholic hepatitis. This had just over 1,100 patients. Boom, that is the trial we've all been waiting for, because that trial is more patients than all other trials really combined. This is the big daddy, and they still had to stop it early because of not enough funding to enroll patients. However, when they did do the trial, this is what they were doing. You were either to receive prednisolone, pentoxifilin, or placebo, or both. So you got placebo, or prednisolone and placebo, or pentoxifilin and placebo, or prednisolone and pentoxifilin. It was a 2x2 study, if you will. The primary outcome, the one thing we're really looking for, is the all-cause mortality at 28 days. And then the secondary outcomes, I almost left them off, but I'll throw them in there for you. Liver transplant at 90 days and 1 year, and mortality at 90 days and 1 year. The average alcohol consumption in this trial was about 8 drinks a day for males, 6 drinks a day for females. Their average MADRI discriminant function score, they had to be over 32 just to get in the trial, but the average number in this study was 62 with a MELD score of 21. Again, those are both very high numbers when we're talking about discriminant function score and a MELD score. And if you're going to argue there are patients that need to be treated with prednisolone, patients that need to be treated with steroids to show benefit, show a mortality benefit, this is them. A couple other quick things for you. The average bilirubin was 18, and the average PT was 21 seconds. So this is the trial we're looking for. These are the sick patients. These are the ones that Cochrane was talking about when they said with the really sick patients, there could be some benefit. So let's look at the outcomes. Let's quickly go over these because I don't want to bore you with numbers. I don't want to bore you with numbers. It's just me by myself. There's not Joe here to distract you or confuse you, depending on which one he does. Joe, I hope you're listening. So the primary outcome, all-cause mortality at 21 days, and there was no difference. No difference at all. There was a trend, a non-significant trend, towards a decrease in mortality with 14% compared to 17% in placebo. That was an odds ratio of 0.72 with the confidence interval just crossing over 1, going from 0.5 to 1.01. Again, not statistically significant, but definitely a trend in that direction. However, with all good things comes harm and increase in serious infections. In the numbers there being 13% of serious infections in the prednisolone group and only 7% in the placebo group. That had a p-value of 0.0002. I think we can definitely say that that's real. So maybe we're saving some, but we're giving others infections. If we give them bad enough infections, do they then die outside of the 30 days? Well, yeah, it appears that they probably did, because when we look at the mortality at 90 days and 1 year, it's almost identical. Like, there's no difference whatsoever. You can't squeeze a hair between them. Oh, and what about that other secondary outcome, that liver transplant, 90 days and 1 year? Again, no difference at all. Like, not even a little bit. You couldn't get a thumbnail between them. It is literally so close. That's why I almost didn't put the secondary outcomes in, is because there was seriously, they're not even worth talking about. It's the exact same thing. So what do you take away from this? First of all, it's hard to break old habits, and I am also guilty of doing a MADRI discriminant function scale or doing a MELD test or trying to see which patients need steroids, which ones don't need steroids. I get it. It's tough to break old habits, but I can for sure say the best available evidence that if prednisolone works for alcoholic hepatitis, it only works for 30 days, and it for sure will not work at 90 days. So then we must ask ourselves, if we're only improving maybe for some a slight improvement in length of life at 30 days, what is the quality of life that patient is going to receive the next 15 days? I mean, yes, the patient may not die at day 21. They may live to day 41, but those last 20 days of life, how good was the quality? It looks good in a trial. It says that they will live a little longer, but what kind of quality of life are we giving them? Are we getting them out of the hospital, onto the beach, onto the sunny sands of St. Petersburg, Florida? I don't think so. I don't think there's any necessarily right answer to this. It will be incredibly interesting to see what Cochrane says when they update the review. As I said, the last one was back in 2008. This study just came out in 2015. That's 7 years between the two. It would seem it is time for Cochrane to come out with a new suggestion, initiation, or recommendation. And when it does come out, I promise you I will give you a brief summary right here on Questioning Medicine. I think that sums it up. As always, keep listening, keep learning, and keep questioning. Check out Primary Care Wrap. We're doing more and more things on there. That is excellent CME and enjoyable to listen to, whether you're going to or from work or just sitting in your house. So that wraps up this episode. And until next time, keep the quest and questioning. You had some of the best times you'll never reach.